Why do you think I was in Alaska?
I just said Alaskan Airlines. I'm just messing with you.
That's because they have a little airport here, and Alaska Airlines flies into it.
That's funny that it flies you back and forth between Santa Rosa and Los Angeles.
Though. Well, they're West Coast. They go to, like, Seattle and Portland. They used to go to Las Vegas. It's great. You could go right from Santa Rosa to Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Super easy to park. You know, it's right near me. San Francisco or Oakland's kind of a pain to drive to.
Yeah, it's kind of like driving to Atlanta, I'm sure.
Then when you land, you got another hour and a half drive to get home.
So it's exactly like Atlanta.
Yeah, Santa Rosa and San Francisco are exactly like Atlanta.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is the West Coast Project Podcast, Michelle from Tennessee. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
That was an intro.
Okay.
Seemed to baffle you with my intro.
You did good.
West Coast Project, and this is Louie TV, our podcast for Louis C.K. show, Louie. Michelle, what is the meaning of this?
You know, if you figure it out, I'm going to be worried about you. Seriously.
Well, I did kind of figure it. I mean, there's some themes to it that you can clearly see.
Yeah. The main thing I could see was that I definitely understood the title.
Yeah, right. How could you ever slap a title on this thing?
I couldn't even believe the description. You know, Jane goes to the doctor. I thought it was going to be something wrong with Jane, or Jane's sick, or Louie's dealing with a sick kid, or, you know, you just kind of think things like that. And then, of course, that was just like the first thing that happened. It was nothing. But there was no way to even, how would you even put a description on this? I would have, like, entitled it Naked Greasy Dream Guy or something. Naked Greasy Nightmare. I don't know. It was horrible.
I would have entitled it, like, A Journey into Existentialism. Existentialism. A Journey into the Mind. A Journey into Thinking how the Mind Ticks or something.
Or just schizophrenia?
Or water. There was a lot of water themed in this episode. The fish tank, the lobster tank, the glass of water that was the cure for Jane.
I have to wonder sometimes if Louie's not messing with us. Because this was just all over the place. And I mean, I kind of got it. And I really like how he's coming full circle and all that. From the beginning of an episode to the end of the episode. As I'm sure you know about me, this is not my favorite episode by far. I really didn't like it. But there was areas that I could definitely relate to it. Again, in a way that was kind of odd. And I kind of thought, ooh, that's weird.
Not enough gunshots and car chases for you, huh, Michelle?
Yeah, not enough explosions and stuff like that. What did you think about it?
You don't get very many Dukes of Hazzard scenes like Kentucky and Tennessee has in Louie. I gotta admit that.
Okay.
Not many cars jump through barns. Well, let's just go through it. So, besides the ghost guy, the blue man paled down to white, the hairless ghost guy, we had a reunion of a bunch of people. Todd Barry, his comedian buddies, Todd Barry and Jimmy Norton, Nick DiPaolo, Charles Grodin is the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did get to see Dr. Bigelow again. I kind of like that.
And then the comedy club, too. They spent more time in the club. We got back to some comedy routines and dialogues. And so Louie has a pretty good joke about this beekeeping. Got into beekeeping, but just too many bees. So I'm just going to keep one. Why you got a bee like that? Kind of silly, but, you know, it's a little funny, I guess.
I thought it was funny. I thought that was good. I enjoyed that.
And then even the revisited theme of the stolen joke by this glazy guy steals his joke right from under his nose and doesn't perform it right.
Well, that's the thing. Well, he actually performed it well when he performed it, but he's telling it to somebody, and Louie hears him backstage, and he just butchers it. He butchers it. So what do you think the theme of this thing is? Is it just like aggravation or nonsensical, or because he just butchers his joke, and then Louis feels the need to, like, retell the joke to make it sound funny. And of course, at that point, it's not funny. So it's just like this constant thing with him where he can't get any peace for anything.
Well, I don't think Crazy Glazy told it well on stage at the end either.
He didn't tell it nearly as well, but he was getting some laughs about it. The way
stupid.
He was going,
they bite me here, they bite me here. I mean, how is that funny? That wasn't funny to me.
No, it wasn't. But it was. He had definitely refined it from the way he was telling it backstage. And it was just, he told it so poorly that Louis felt like he had to retell the joke individually.
Yeah, once again, Louis's the overridden, he can't get a word in edgewise. He can't even correct the guy. The guy blusters through describing this really funny joke in the wrong way, so it's not funny, and Louis can't even get it in edgewise to correct the guy.
Do you know this guy, John Glaser?
I don't really know him. I just think I've been... this is the first time I've ever seen him. Crazy Glaser.
He plays on Parks and Recreation, and just a... fun little thing that I found out when I use Google Documents to take my notes, and it was throwing up some information on the side. Now they've got this thing that automatically throws up information about what you type in. So I thought that was kind of neat, and I read that he was from Parks and Rec. I don't watch that, but I thought it was interesting. I didn't know who he was even. But I did think he played this role pretty good.
Once again, Michelle, not many car chases and gunshots in Parks and Rec.
I don't know.
This is my existential therapy, picking on Michelle from Tennessee.
You're very good at it.
All right, well, we'll go to the doctor's office with Louis and Jane, his daughter, Jane. And the first person they encounter is this angry, unfriendly lady sitting there in the waiting room.
Yeah, she's even scolding her daughter for sneezing.
Jane comments, Louis says hello, and the lady just glares at him. And Jane even says she's not very friendly. Pretty nice audience comment there. She says out loud what we're thinking.
And then Louis tries to scold Jane for it, and then he's like, ends up agreeing with her, which was kind of funny. He's like, yeah, you're not very friendly.
Louis is a good guy. At least his character. I don't know Louis C.K., but Louis on the show, he's a good guy. He's trying to always do the right thing. He's human. He's got his flaws, of course, but he's trying to do the right thing, right? He's trying to keep his daughter, train her for society and get her to, you know, recognize and say hello to people. And then he's honest. The lady wasn't very friendly. I don't know. I like when Louis's just an honest, good guy like that.
I agree.
So they see Grodin, the doctor, and they get a better hello. Communication with him. It seems like they practiced what they just did. Like maybe the guy with the joke, right? He tells it really crappy and he gets a little bit better at it. They do a little bit better with their hello to Grodin. Like maybe Jane had just learned something from this crappy interaction with this lady.
Yeah, but how odd was that? I think this is our first where Louis takes the sucker and won't give the sucker to Jane. That's backward because you get your sucker when you leave the doctor's office, not when you go in the doctor's office. You get a sucker for being good in the doctor's office. So anyway, whatever, that was kind of backward. And then they say hello to one another, Dr. Bigelow and Jane, in what was it, Navajo? And it was like, yeah, I think that's what they said. I think they said it was in Navajo. And it was like, what? I mean, it was just another one of those kind of surreal moments. I rewound it a couple times. Like, is it in Navajo they're saying hello to one another? And, of course, Louis, it's a part that he doesn't understand. He's just like, what? And I had the same reaction he did.
So Jane has this rash. She says for 2 months. Louis says for 2 days.
And she doesn't even have it anymore. And that's why she's there, talking about a rash that's gone away.
Yeah, but what she's really there for is her psychological. I think it's a good thing. It's thinking. She's exploring where she was before she was born, and she says she sweats from the inside out, sees electricity, green lights, light bulbs, electrons colliding. She takes a breath and vanishes into the nothing that she was before she was born. Pretty existential. Thinking about where you are, what were you before you were born, and then where are you after you die?
Yeah, I didn't take it in any way as any kind of deep thought. I took it a whole lot more as just stuff that's happening to Louis that he can't make heads or tails out of. It was just because he's sitting there looking at her like she's crying. He's almost embarrassed by what she's saying.
Well, why can't that happen to Jane? Why can't Jane wonder about her?
Anybody can wonder anything they want, but she's talking about sweating inside her face. And just she goes to the doctor for a rash that's gone. And because she feels like she's sweating inside her face. And the whole thing is just nonsensical. It's completely out of touch with reality of why you would actually go to a medical doctor anyway. And then he tells her she's probably dehydrated, have a glass of water. And that just makes her happy. And the whole thing, Louis's like, aren't you even going to examine, or aren't you even going to look at her? And he goes, well, I'm looking at her. The whole thing was just like this stuff that Louis couldn't understand. He didn't understand what's going on.
Yeah,
that's how I took it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also upstage for us to think, well, what does happen before we were born? Who was I before I was born?
Oh my gosh, I didn't think any of that stuff. I just thought Jane was rambling on about, I don't know, just a way to get attention almost. Did you like this episode?
I love this episode.
I thought you would. Okay.
It made me think about where I was before I was born.
It didn't give me any. I only felt Louis's embarrassment for taking his child to the doctor and just how nonsensical the whole trip was.
Yeah, but it's related later on when Nick asks Louis, "What, you know, explore yourself. What changed before?" So Louis has to look at his life. I mean, it isn't just isolated. This thought about where are we and what do we do. You know,
it never is in Louis. It's always like at least a background hum, I think, in Louis. The whole what's my purpose kind of thing. But
well, that means it's not just Jane ranting. It's related to the theme of the episode.
Okay. I can see where you're getting that from this. It's just not at all how I took it when I was watching it.
Well, they go to pick up Lily, and Jane tells Louis she's jealous because Lily has friends and she does not. That's also a pretty thoughtful statement. Like, people oftentimes think they don't have friends when they really do have a lot of friends. They just feel kind of isolated, or they feel unsettled by it.
Yeah, that was really bad. I didn't like a kid feeling like that at all. She said that people in her class signed some petition saying they didn't like her.
Yeah, who hates Jane petition?
That's horrible.
So that little theme kind of hung out for us to look at. And then Louis moves into the elevator and moves up to this lady's apartment, Barbara, who's Lily's friend's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks Louis to move a fish tank, Michelle, from Tennessee. Big fish tank. And at first, this Barbara woman looks, she appears really happy and smiley, but that falls apart pretty quickly. As soon as Louis says, I can't move this fish tank. This is a project, man. You can't just pick this thing up and move it. You got to empty it. You got to move the fish. You got to redo the water. She breaks down a little bit, and she says some comment about her husband or lover or whomever, this Jack guy just left her, and she's been kind of falling apart. She can't really fix things. And Louis tries to comfort her with a blanket that pretty much turns from comforting her to covering her up.
Right.
Like she's a pile of leaves, and then he does leave.
Right. It was like a another area that he was just uncomfortable. He was embarrassed. He tried to very awkwardly comfort her, you know, cheer up or whatever he said, and then he, in place of wrapping this blanket, you know, kindly around her, he just like puts it over her head, like he like pulls it slowly up over her head as a t- to relieve him of having to view this.
Yeah, life is too hard.
Right.
She says that. Now, so that's the theme, right? Life is too hard. You cover up your problems and they don't go away. They haunt you like the nightmares. So when Nick says, hey, Louis, where does this all stem back to? Louis had covered up this lady's problem. Like, oh, well, it's not my problem. I'll just cover it up and move on and go happily on my way.
Absolutely.
That doesn't work. So at the end of the episode, when Louis realizes that is this, he gets kind of relief from this nightmare stage he's in. I don't know. I thought it was symbolic. It was funny to pull the blanket over her, but it was also symbolic of kind of what they're saying.
Yeah, it kind of is. It was. Don't you think it's kind of an odd thing for somebody that you just meet to ask you to do something so drastic?
Well, like nothing odd ever happens on Louis.
Well, no. Yeah, absolutely. But does it ever happen with you? Like,
I might. There is some sensibility to that. If I was a woman, broken up with my partner, the guy is usually the stronger person to physically move stuff. I might see, hey, could you give me a hand with... She didn't really realize it's a big, big task like that. I could see her asking.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Yeah. But she had to have known that was a bigger task. That's kind of what made it funny. I mean, I've had not an aquarium, but frogs, aquatic frogs for the girls when they were little. And moving, emptying that thing and cleaning it and moving it. And it was such a project. It was a big, big deal. But this is the first place that I started to kind of really relate. The rest of the episode prior to this, I didn't have a whole lot of relation to it. But here, just this week, we've had some people staying in the deck. We have a big deck. It's, you know, kind of large. And we had people staying in it. It's a big, big project. And they've been pressure washing it and doing stuff like that. So it's driven some insects into the house because I had the house open. And so I was up in the bedroom just a couple days ago when there's a skylight in the bedroom. And there was this insect up in the skylight, way up in the skylight, and I couldn't get it. So I go outside and get one of the guys who's staying in the deck. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I can't leave this up here. And I ask him if he'll come in and kill this insect for me or get it. And he actually did. And it was a little uncomfortable, but it wasn't as uncomfortable as leaving the insect up in the skylight. And so I really sympathized with her, even though I thought that was asking someone to move an aquarium is a whole lot more than asking a big, tall guy to get an insect. I don't know.
How long have you been having these dreams, Michelle?
No, that's just it. This wasn't even a dream. And I thought that was so funny that this just happened to me a couple days ago. And I just cannot imagine ever asking somebody I don't know to do something like
that. It was exaggerated by the big, giant fish tank, but the... You know, and she was kind of flirting with him, too. She was just been left alone. She liked probably the interaction with a guy that could help her. And it felt good to talk to a guy, probably. But it was exaggerated, definitely, by the gigantic size and weight of the fish tank.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so they go to the, after picking up Lily, they go to the grocery store and get a little bit more existentialism. Like, Jane sees the lobsters and asks if they live in that tank. Is that it for them? And Louis says, they're just food. That's all they are. And I'm moving happily on my way. I don't care that... Louis didn't care they were in the tank. Jane cared. I don't know. It's funny and it was interesting. And it was connected, I thought. I think that's the theme of like, what in our lives, are we in this little tank and then that's it and it's over? Or is there more to it before we came around and after we're gone? I don't know.
Well, and I also saw a lot of girl-boy stuff in this, too, because that's a very girl thing to care. The girl can't do this heavy, or she won't. She won't do this heavy job and ask Louis to do it. And then you know, his daughter is upset over the lobster, but he is like, that's dinner. Those people are dinner. She's like, well, how would you like to live there? And he's like, well, I'm people and those people are dinner or whatever. So it was I saw that more than once.
I wonder if Louis sketches these ideas out beforehand, like two themes, existentialism and where we are before we die and after we die, before we're born. And then, like, breaks them apart into the scenes that are separate, because he's going to pick up the girls, he's in the comedy club, he's at the doctor's office. And so he has the main theme is one stream continuous, but then he breaks it up into these acts in the show.
Well, one of the themes, though, goes back to Louis's other background all the time, is where he fits in as a man with women. We see that too because of his the bad dream where he turns into some kind of freak. He's deformed, and I don't know, I just think that we see that too. It was almost this girl boy thing that I'm seeing.
Yeah, he's very much that way with Pamela, and of course, all of last season was about his experience with women, a number of different women.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about the boy girl, like male female roles in life, like who picks up heavy stuff and who bakes and that kind
of. Right. Yeah. And how he views himself, because one of his nightmares was his genitals. You know, I mean, that's definitely kind of like a, where am I on the masculine side? Whatever he had going on in that shot certainly wasn't anything that looked particularly masculine. It was very, very weird, like a cruller or something. I don't know, but I think it related to his manhood as much. He's being attacked by a man, and his masculinity is defaced, and he doesn't do something for the female, and he doesn't have the same thoughts as Jane as far as the compassion for the lobster. I see a whole lot of male-female stuff in everything he does, almost.
Well, that's interesting, because, like, last episode he was knitting.
Yeah, knitting. He's knitting, he's cooking. And he was like the girl. Remember, that was the episode before, but last episode he's like puts on the makeup, remember? And yeah. And all that. And he was kind of like the girl in the relationship with Pamela. We've said forever that he's the girl in the relationship kind of with Pamela from the get-go, but we just see a whole bunch of this, I think. And I even related a lot of it into this episode, even though it wasn't as overt, I don't think.
You might have a good point. You know, you teach Gerald Crow how to knit, and you're breaking some gender lines there.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so now, Michelle, Lily starts talking about Clockwork Orange, the movie Clockwork Orange, how she and her friends watched it. Now, Lily is probably, what, 15?
I would guess, like, 14 or so, just
to
guess.
Have you seen Clockwork Orange?
You know, I'm sure I have years ago, and I went back and read about it. I hate those kind of just violent movies, so I probably watched as little of it as I could get away with. But yeah, I'm sure I have, and I'm sure you have, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember any gunshots or car chases, but I know it's violent. The Stanley Kubrick, for one thing, that's pretty much all you need to know, directed it. So these dudes in London are, you know, they get high on these drugs, and then they just go into ultra-violence mode, they call it, where they just beat up people and rape people. Then they beat up, like, old people, innocent people. You know, they beat up a guy and then rape his wife in front of him. It's just horribly ultra, ultra violent. So for Lily to watch this movie and think it's arty.
Oh, I know. And to be smiling and just say it like she's talking about the pizza they had for dinner. So, oh yeah, we watched a movie, and that was stunning.
Yeah. And then Louis just like, what the heck? But he can't do much about it. Her capping it off with, oh yeah, it was arty. He can't argue. He doesn't argue. He just lets it go. Right? He doesn't get on the phone. Let me talk to this woman. I'll set her straight. Don't ever do this again. He just accepts it.
Well, yeah, but you kind of would think, particularly after what he's just been through at her house, that I imagined Louis thinking, who could let these girls watch this movie? And then it immediately goes back to, okay, this woman who is distraught and checked out and that kind of thing. So I think it would, I know that's how my mind would go.
This is Lily. Oh, that was Lily. You're right.
It was Lily. Yeah.
That was that woman. You're right.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm assuming that's why. Either the girls are like, let's watch something that we can get away with because, you know, mom's not paying us a lot of attention at the moment or whatever. Or if she was just completely checked out on the situation because we saw
her. Or encouraged it. Girls, this is a great movie. You should watch it. I mean, I don't think, I wouldn't put that past Louis to imply that.
Oh, gosh. I would hope she's not that, that's a little young.
What did you think, Michelle, of the cab grocery shopping? I bet you've never done that in your life.
Never in my life have I done that.
I've never done that.
Have you not?
No.
I thought that was really, I liked that. It really showed a different,
urban hood. You don't have a car. You go to the store, take a cab to the store, buy three bags of groceries, pile your kids in the cab and take it all home.
I liked it.
Well, Louis falls asleep in the cab. You know, this episode started to get confusing as to when he was really dreaming and when he was really awakened in real life.
Have you ever had that? Have you ever had those dreams like that, that you question your reality and dream state?
And then you wake up, and then you wake up again?
Yeah.
You thought you were, so I guess, probably sometimes. I can't think of one in particular.
Okay, this is number two that I really related. Just in the last couple weeks, we watched a movie a couple of Sundays ago called Babadook, and it was just scary movie, and I'm the biggest girl amongst anybody, and I get scared at scary movies, but I wasn't scared at this movie for whatever reason. The parts that were scary and suspenseful to everybody else were funny to me. There was something I was actually giggling through the movie because it was like just something about it struck me as funny. I never had any, oh, this is horrible. The movie went off. I wasn't anxious or anything like that. So a couple of nights go by, and I'm asleep, hadn't thought of the movie again, and I'm asleep, and I wake up, and I sit up in bed because the door's opening, and I'm waiting on the dog to come in or one of the girls to come in or something, and nobody comes in, and then the door starts to close, and the Babadook's hanging on the back of my door.
What's a Babadook?
The Babadook, it's,
hold on a second.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
So what's a Babadook?
It's a book. It was like this, you never see it really good, but it's a bad thing. I don't know if we ever even figured out what it was, but it's a book about something bad coming for you, and you kind of see like shadows of it or whatever, and you actually see a little better than that, but I don't even remember that much, but I remember it was just hanging on the back of my door, and so I jerk awake, and I was really confused for a minute of whether I was still in a dream, because I thought I was awake in my dream, and it was really funny that I just saw this and then had that happen. It was really kind of a weird, weird coincidence considering the insect up in the skylight, and I invited somebody into my home and asked them to do something that I would never do, me as a female, and then having this dream sleep, not being able to tell the reality from my dream state.
Maybe so. Louis C.K. is modeling your life for his comedy show. He's the crazy glazy stealing your life right out from under you.
Isn't that weird, though? I mean, just in a couple weeks, having two of those same experiences that are odd.
I think they're weirder to you than to third parties.
I don't know. I think if it had happened to you in the last week or so, it would seem really odd.
Maybe. But we tend to attach things in our lives to current events.
You're right.
But Louis, back to the cab. Louis falls asleep in the cab. And this is how this demon guy first gets let into Louis's life, I guess, and we see him. But the girls giggle at him in the cab. That was pretty funny. Daddy's asleep again. And then he gets home, he wakes up and goes home and goes right back to sleep. And this is where we really see this demon guy, this little white blue man with no hair and no eyeballs. And he jumps up suddenly out of the dark. Louis opens the door, and it's blackness beyond the door threshold, and then this guy jumps right out. Like scary things always do. They don't introduce themselves nicely.
Right.
They jump. So, and that was it for the first setting, the first act, I guess, and the commercial came up.
The commercial for San Andreas. What do you think? Good or bad? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I have no idea what San Andreas is.
Oh, it's a movie coming out about, I guess, a quake or something on the San Andreas fault line. I don't know. I thought it looked pretty good, but people either seem to really love it or not.
Like Tremors?
No, it didn't seem like Tremors. It seemed more like a, I don't know, War of the Worlds almost kind of, I don't know, something, well, not really. It's just more like a disaster type movie, a natural disaster and explosions and car chases and that kind of stuff.
Oh, good times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so back after the commercial, we're at the comedy club and it's Crazy Glazy with the stolen joke. And again, I think he's just a bad comedian. It wasn't funny, and he improved a little, but it still wasn't funny. But he comes off stage, and Louis's like, "What the fuck, man? You stole my joke." By the way, the black hostess, the hostess lady, was doing some pretty raunchy jokes. Did you catch those?
You know, I didn't. It was so late, and I didn't want to turn the TV up that loud, and she was kind of doing it in the background. I did not catch that. I wanted to, but I didn't.
It was all about, like, her nipples and how raunchy stuff with her cat. She was pretty racy. It was pretty racy. But then Louis goes up on stage and then sleeps. And this was kind of the odd dream sequence that was hard to notice separate the reality of Louis awake and Louis asleep. But the weird sequence with Jim Norton and the lady, Jim Norton, the comedian, and the lady with her mouth like a fish out of water. And Louis just repeating, "I don't know which one, I don't know which one." And the lady opening and closing her mouth and as Jim Norton tells him, "Don't do it."
Yeah, and he's like tempted to put his hand in her mouth. Right. I mean, why would you ever be tempted to put your hand in somebody's mouth that's threatening to bite you, kind of?
Very weird scene. And so Louis does put his hand in her mouth, and she bites him, and then he gets the statue penis, the little flower bud stone penis.
Yeah, it kind of looked like a cruller to me.
As all penises do.
No, well, this was real. And he's screaming, you know, and then he goes up on the stage naked with his deformity. And I mean,
yeah, among statues, he walks past the crowd of the comedy club / doctor's office waiting room with all the doors, and the statues are mingled in with the people in the audience.
The mannequins, yeah.
Well, yeah, mannequins, statues. Yeah. But then he can't speak when he's on stage. He gives the gibberish. He can't put a word together.
Right. He can't even say words. And then the naked greasy, you know, bald guy jumps on him. And in this one, he's like trying to lick him. Did you notice that? Most of the time, he's like going for his neck and trying to bite him. And it looked like in this one, he was trying to lick him.
Well, he's getting to know him.
Oh, okay.
So now we come back. There was a commercial and we come back. And I don't even know if it's a dream or not. I have in my notes, I have dream start, dream middle, and dream stop. But I put dream starts. Louis with the boys again. Todd Barry and Nick is comedy buddies, and they tell him he looks tired, and then of course Todd Barry and ugly and stupid. Nick's trying to help him, and Todd Barry's just like, "Yeah, you look besides tired, you look ugly and stupid." And Louis says, "I'm having nightmares," and Nick says, "Well, those are the worst. They come from the inside." And then suggests melatonin, hypnosis, and then at the end of it, just not complaining.
Well, because he's offering suggestions, and Louis going, "Nah, I don't want that." And he's like, "We'll do this." And he's like, "Nah, I don't want that." And he's like, "Well, then don't complain about it." And then they tell him everybody hates him anyway.
So then Glazy's wearing his coat across the room. So I put, is this the middle of the dream?
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't figure that out either. That whole thing I've got a question mark on too. But why would Glazy have his coat on?
Because he's stealing his stuff. He stole his coat, stole his joke.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. That's funny. So it had to have been a dream.
And then the doctor, even Grodin, comes back. And Dr. Grodin, what's his doctor's name in the show?
Dr. Bigelow.
He comes back, and his philosophy on dreams is that they're moral corrections, punishing. It's the correcting way of our punishing ourselves for what we do in real life, awakened life.
And oh my gosh, I didn't think about it, but Dr. Bigelow is almost always eating when he's sitting behind his desk. I don't know if you've paid any attention to that, but several times I've noticed, because he eats very deliberately when he's eating. And was he eating a donut?
I have no idea.
In this? Okay. Anyway, I thought that was just...
So he gives Louis the glass of water solution, right? Just don't worry. Just get on with your life. Like, wait, how did this guy ever get a doctor's degree, a medical degree, a medical license even? But he tells him, just simple, just get on with your life. That's the cure.
Yeah, just let them run their course.
And then, speaking of running, the white monster guy runs in and bites him. And doctor just says, sorry.
He just jumps up on his desk from behind his desk, and Dr. Bigelow's like, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
So then Louis talks to his dream and says, okay, dream, please stop and don't be scary anymore. And he tries, looks like he's going back to sleep. So I guess that was the dream end or another new scene, but it was all related to this sleep. And Louis now, he's confronting his dream, at least by talking to it, trying to tell it to go away and stop.
Well,
if you're
going to
be here, just don't be scary.
Right. And that's when it just gets super crazy. That's when there's not even any sensical parts in the whole thing.
Yeah, this scene is helped by this crazy Russian music, this frantic music that he plays. So we know that there's no doubt this is like a solid stream of dreaming, because he's humping the white rabbit, who apparently is Bobby in a white rabbit's head.
Yeah, and making out with the rabbit, and there's mannequin heads, and there's one point where the greasy, naked, bald guy is, like, dancing behind him, and Louis smiling or laughing. It's just a really quick scene in there, and just the oddest things ever.
Bobby calling him bro. Bro, bro. And it's all in this red room, maze, red light lit, crazy setting. And we get a commercial, Michelle, from Tennessee. And then we come back to the bakery. And Louis buying a cannoli made with filling from raccoon jizz, according to Nick. And Nick says something about he's leaving his girl to make her more suspicious. She's just too confident.
Yeah, but he acted weird when he left on purpose to make her think he's cheating on her. But he's too old to actually cheat. I mean, what?
Yeah, it doesn't count if you're over 40 or something. So Louis eats the cannoli while he's in line. Have you ever done that, Michelle, eating food in the grocery store before you paid for it?
Well, probably not. Have you?
I don't like to. I don't even, like, if I get fast food and I'm on my way home, I like to wait till I get home. I don't like to eat
right?
in the car.
I know. Who does that? They eat while they drive. I mean, you can't enjoy it if you do that.
Sometimes if I go grocery, I'll open something and snack on it in the car sometimes.
Well, I might have like some grapes or something easy, just a couple, but not that sit there and eat it while you're, I don't know. What are you going to do? Go up there and wait in line with your wrapper? Although, back in the day, I would do that with the kids sometimes when they were little, if they were starving or something.
Well, you could not do that with grapes because they have to weigh it. Anything you have to weigh, you couldn't do that with.
No. Not something like that I'm talking about. In the car, I would eat something simple like grapes, something that you could just, you know, eat, or a banana or something like that. But I'm talking about like in the store, you know, something different. Absolutely.
So there's a commercial. No, we already passed that. There's no commercial. Nick asks him about this dream. What was it that changed in your life? And I guess before this, sorry, I got all jumbled up here when I started talking about eating food while driving. But Louis says, I have PTSD from my dreams. That's the opposite. Dreams are supposed to settle you and resolve your problems, not give you new ones. But Louis's beaten up. He has PTSD from his dreams. That was pretty funny.
Well, right, but his friend even talks about that. He doesn't sleep at all. He sleeps for like 2 hours, and then he just wakes up. And we see Louis smile here, too. It's only the second time in this whole episode that I caught him smiling. And it's almost, it was real interesting. It's almost like he's breaking the fourth wall or something when he does this.
When he smiles with Nick?
Yeah. Yeah. Or when he was smiling and the naked, greasy, bald guy's dancing behind him. Either way, it was almost like, you know how like at the end of the Cops episode and he's sitting there and they're laughing when he's trying to teach him how to knit? And it was almost a situation like that. And I just got to say that I really like, it's a completely different Louis when I see him smile. It's this confident looking Louis. And it just seems like a whole different person to me. And I wonder how much of his life has that scared, confused face and how much of it is really the confident, smiling guy.
Probably more of it now that he's super successful, that it's confident.
Smiling. I hope so.
But Louis, the bedazzled Louis, the beleaguered Louis, is pretty lovable too. I like the beleaguered Louis.
You do not.
I do. I like him being human.
Yeah, I mean human, but smiling sometimes. I'm much more drawn to him like that. I think that's why for a long time I really rooted for him and Pamela, because he smiled a lot. I don't know. That just kind of struck me, so I took a note of that.
Well, Nick has the key to the lock of this episode, for me anyway. He asks him, what's causing the nightmares? What changed in your life? What's going on? And then we get a series of jump cuts with the mom, the Barbara mom. Mm-hmm. He's fixing her. He's finally moving the fish tank by siphoning the fish out with a hose. Now, that is not a good idea. Louis is bigger and stronger, but he's not much more of a solute. He's not a handyman. I don't know if I maybe bake or knit something, but I don't think I'd want Louis doing those household chores around my house.
Well, he got it done, though, and she was obviously pretty grateful. He
swallowed some fish tank water.
That was really bad, I know. I mean, there's no point in getting it, you know, to that level when you're siphoning water, but he did.
So Louis does a series of fixes around her house.
It's a very guy thing to do, though, don't you think?
Including,
I mean, he goes and does the man stuff there.
Including humping her halfway through it.
Yeah, he did that
too. Did you notice she does nothing? She does absolutely nothing. She just watches him and smiles.
Yeah, she's standing over him, and it's that whole how much of a man he is, taking care of all this while the woman stands beside him and smiles and praises him.
So Louis finally gets his sleep. He's solved it. He gets his sleep and to the beautiful lullaby of diarrhea.
Jeez. You know, okay. I tried looking up lyrics to that song, and that is, first of all, it's not a song that I could find at all. And I really hate that that's now somewhere attached to my Google search, because that was ridiculous.
And just I don't a think parody.
Yeah, but I don't think we were even supposed to be paying attention to the words. The melody was different, but the words to that were just, it was horrible.
Well, and then Louis falls asleep with a smile on his face. He's having happy dreams, unvisited by that hairless white man. and that's the end. And now Michelle, next week, 506, is Sleepover. What a connection. What a lead into Sleepover.
I guess I'm a little scared. And I wonder, is it Sleepover with Pamela? It's not. It's one of his daughters, right? Is having a sleepover at his house?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
You mean sleepover like the sexual connotation from Pamela? We'll have a sleepover.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Is it that kind of sleepover?
That's what you mean by Pamela.
Right,
it's like a sex date.
Right.
I don't know. No idea. I don't know if anyone says it anywhere, but that's
what Pamela was calling it, right? A sleepover?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But we don't know that's this.
We don't know.
That's it for 505 Untitled. There are only 8 episodes this season. Sleepovers 6, then 7 and 8 are The Road, Part 1 and 2.
Right, and that's the one that he was talking about, being on the road and how much he missed the hardships and everything. So I'm really interested in those last two. And I kind of like it when he does little, what's it called? You know, little, like, groups of episodes together like that. I've always liked it when he did that, like the Pamela 1, 2, 3 or whatever, the elevator and all that. I kind of like the continuity of those, because with Louis, if it doesn't specifically show the or say that there's going to be continuity, you can almost count on there not being. This was with the same background hum of the things that he always has in his episodes. It was completely different from anything else we've seen. And I couldn't find a lot on this episode. Could you? There wasn't a lot of write-up on it. I don't know if people just, like, watched it and went, huh? Or what? Or if it just took some time for people to actually put thought to what they had seen.
I didn't look too hard. You know, one thing about Louis, right now at this moment in our podcast, we're at like 48 minutes. Louis is hard to do a podcast shorter than the length of the episode. The way you talk about it is a multiple, one times plus more in length of the episode itself, because there's so much to talk about.
Right.
So I don't think I needed any help. I just like took a million notes and got, I made a couple notes about Clockwork Orange, but. Yeah, it's a thinker. You got to really pick this one apart.
Yeah, this one was just so odd and obscure to me. And I think, like I said, because I related to two of those incidences, that I I was a little bit freaked out by it. So,
all right, Michelle, that's it for Untitled. WestCoastProject.com is the website where you can see a bunch of other podcast strings and connect with us. And my Twitter is at Scathing Tweets. And what's yours?
Michelle from TN.
At Michelle from TN. All right. So until next week, sleepover, till our sleepover. Do you have any last comments, Michelle?
That's it.
All right. I'll see you at the sleepover.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.